You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning. Welcome to Matinair on Air. My name is Greg Box, sitting in for Jane Matinair, who is currently vacating, relaxing, resting. She will be back before you know it in a few days, and it's going to be a fun time here on the show today. Very, very packed show. Let's see here. At 9:35, we've got Sarah Gonski, who is the Director of State Policy for the Institute for Responsive Government. She's going to be here talking about the new attacks from the Trump administration on mail-in voting and voting machines, why this is important, what we know, and what we know is absolutely constitutionally and protected for the right to vote by voting machines and by mail-in voting. We're going to be talking to Sarah Gonski about that. Also at 10:06, it is the first Wednesday of the month, which means we get a visit from the president of Wisconsin Farmers Union. Darren Von Rudin is here to talk about all things. He's going to be talking about the farm bill. He'll be talking about what they'll be speaking to policymakers next week, as well as reorganization at the USDA. That's going to be at 10:06 in the second hour, so don't go anywhere. You want to stick around for Darren's update on the farming world here in Wisconsin. Then we're going to have Audio Sorbet, and this is kind of a fun one. So yesterday, Calvin Butenhoff, sweet Cal B, is on the boards right now doing all the ones and twos. Yesterday, we had guests on yesterday who were just teaching me all sorts of amazing things about Wisconsin. So I thought to myself, what else don't I know about Wisconsin? And I found a really cool story in Travel Wisconsin about the 20 things you may or may not know about this state. I thought we could talk about those. But what's an audio sorbet without the wonderful participation from the people out there in the world listening, watching? If you want to participate and be a part of the conversation, you can do that by calling or texting. It's the same number, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC, or leave a comment on the live stream. We are currently broadcasting on Facebook, YouTube, and what in this house we still call Twitter. You can be part of that conversation. But at 10:35 later on in the show, you can be part of that. Send us those things that you know about Wisconsin, those fun facts you know about. You can text them in, you can call them in, leave a voice note. But I want to know what you know about Wisconsin that others might not. I think that'd be a fun time. I love learning more about this state from the very, very cool stuff, from that, you know, just Those little nuggets of joy, Calvin. And you are, of course, welcome, Calvin, to participate as well. If there's anything cool about Wisconsin that you want us to know, you can do that by calling or texting 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Or, as I said before, leave a comment on the live stream. And then we're going to wrap up the entire show at 10:52 with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. It is the In the Thick of It event edition, found by Calvin. He will be defending his reasons why this thing should not be a thing. So you want to stick around. It's going to be a really, really fun show. Good morning, Calvin. How are you this fine day? It's rainy out, but how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Greg. How are you?
I am doing peachy keen, I guess. I don't know. There's a lot going on in the news right now, and kind of was like the thing was like where to start was a big shoulder shrug, not because there's not stuff going on, but because it's just all happening all the time. As you know, Calvin, the news never stops. But we're going to start actually a little out of Wisconsin, but trust me, it will connect. I promise you that. This is coming out of the Wisconsin Examiner. Jacob Fischler has the byline. Judge warns of national police force in ruling Trump broke the law sending guard to L.A. So just came down yesterday. U.S. District Judge Charles R. Breyer said that Donald Trump's move to send National Guards and the U.S. Marines to, quote, quell immigration protests in Los Angeles violated a federal law against military members conducting domestic law enforcement, which is something we have been talking about for some time now. Breyer, who is a appointee of Bill Clinton, hold on, it's fine. You know, it's not because he was a Bill Clinton appointee, but he's just upholding the law. He was appointed in 1997, said that Trump could not use the National Guard for a wide array of police activities in California. And the order goes into effect as of September the 12th. He said that the roughly 4,700 guard members and Marines engaged in police activity is in violation of the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878, which was built on the constitutional framers' wariness of a centralized military force conducting police work. We're seeing that in Los Angeles. We saw that in Los Angeles. We are, of course, seeing the, some call it invasion, some call it occupation. I call it, no matter what, this seems unconstitutional, not good, and an overreach of power. We're seeing that in Washington, D.C. The president, in an event yesterday, which I'll get to in a moment, also made clear that he plans. He doesn't have a solid plan or a date in mind, but there will be some sort of troop representation in Chicago as well. I don't know, Calvin. I am not the smartest person in the world. I'm listening to the live stream saying, we know that already. But it doesn't take a rocket scientist. It doesn't take a person working on, you know, spaceships to know that these three cities have something in common, Calvin. But can you put the thread through for me? I mean, I don't know. You're way smarter than me.
Well, I don't know about that. But yeah, it's obvious that these are all blue cities and blue states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the reason why I'm bringing this up, bringing up this story from the judge saying that this is an overreach, is saying that, once again, for the umpteenth time, Donald Trump is overreaching. His minions are overreaching. His plan is to create a police state for what, you know, some say because so they can keep the elections from happening. Some say just because he wants to be an authoritarian dictator. They're all cut from the same cloth of reasons why he's doing this. But the reason I bring this up is because as we see these cities, D.C., Los Angeles, Chicago, I'll bet dollars to donuts that Atlanta is on that list as well. I would love to see a plan, Calvin, where Donald Trump even tries to say New York. I mean, I'm sure he'll wait until after the election. If Mr. Mamdani wins, we'll see there. But the reason why I'm bringing this up, folks, is because also in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, a story written by Lawrence Andrea, and I think it's Lawrence Andrea. My apologies if I'm mispronouncing your last name, sir. Milwaukee police union leader says he's considering asking Trump to send guard troops to the city. This has been something very on the sidelines. It's very, okay, L.A., New York, or L.A., Chicago, D.C., who's next? What's next? What city's next? And now, and this is something for me, like I basically have a question and I might even ask Jim Santel about this, is, you know, this was when Trump sent the troops into Los Angeles, it was not warranted, nor was it welcome. Same with D.C. If the police union president, his name is Alex Ayala, sorry, words are tough. Alex Ayala, said he is, quote, considering sending a letter to the White House requesting National Guard assistance following a series of street takeovers over Labor Day weekend that led to multiple arrests and more than two dozen citations. We've talked about this now on two separate shows. Yesterday with Todd Alba, and we talked about it on Friday with Dan Schaefer as well as Angela Lang. And the crime statistics, regardless of what J.D. Vance says, regardless of Donald Trump says, regardless of what anybody who wants to paint Milwaukee as a crime-ridden hellscape, no matter what they say, the numbers show that violent crimes are down, and I do not believe that what he is considering doing, writing a letter to President Trump, is warranted, is wanted or needed. You want to do something about crime? You come up with a different plan other than asking the president of the United States of America to send the National Guard into the city. Let me know your thoughts on this. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream, and we can absolutely talk about it because I want to know your thoughts.
Yeah,
go on, Calvin.
Just to jump in so people are aware, this is purely anecdotally, and my only source here is Reddit.
Yeah.
But apparently, as of 4 days ago, there were roads shut down in Wikiwaukee in Illinois that people, the residents are claiming are connected to the National Guard's request to have station troops at the Navy base there.
And where is this?
Waukegan, outside of Chicago.
Okay, Waukegan. All right. Well, yeah. I mean, the president has made it clear that Chicago is next on the list. So any sort of movement, and as we know more, we will report, we will talk about it more, we will discuss it more, but this is the plan. And Chicago is very close to Milwaukee by way of, like, just, you know, like 90 miles, 80 miles. And J.D. Vance was in La Crosse last week talking about how crime is so bad there. But he wasn't there. He was in La Crosse, and he was surrounded by his supporters. Of course, they think it's right. I just want to know from you, do you think it's right? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Sue, listening on WAUK, says yes, but the courts keep saying it's not legal, etc., and they keep doing it. They just ignore the law. And I'll say it, all of these cities have black mayors. There's something to be said about that. Even if they didn't have black mayors, they are going to be listed as, quote, Democratic cities run by liberals, liberals who didn't vote for you. And when people don't vote for you, you don't get what you want. In fact, you get things taken away. As we saw yesterday at Donald Trump's press conference in the Oval Office, we were talking about it yesterday. We were kind of surprised. Oval Office address. We thought it was going to be. It ended up being a press conference. There's a difference. He made some statements. He made some remarks. He said that he is going to be moving Space Command from Colorado to Alabama. There are people out there saying why. It's very, very simple. It's very easy. It's very understandable. You can say, like, oh, why is he doing this? I'll let the man himself say it. Calvin, we have a clip of President Trump saying why he wanted to move Space Command from Colorado to Alabama. Can you play that clip?
Thank Colorado. The problem I have with Colorado, one of the big problems, they do mail-in voting. They went to all mail-in voting. So they have automatically crooked elections. And we can't have that. When a state is for mail-in voting, that means they want dishonest elections, because that's what that means. So that played a big factor also.
That's right. It wasn't fiscal. It wasn't done with a report. It wasn't after years of studying. He wanted to do this, actually, by the way, in his first term. He did it because Colorado has mail-in voting.
Also, Greg, keep in mind that Colorado was the only state who made a real effort to keep him off the ballot in the 2024 election.
Okay, then there you go as well. All right, so we're going to keep this conversation going. We got the little starter piece there. We're going to play more in a little bit from another gentleman, from a reporter in Colorado, discussing this. But he's going to do what he wants. He's going to send troops to Milwaukee. He's going to move major pieces of military, part of the military industrial complex, because people don't like him. People didn't vote for him. We're going to keep it going. Give us a call, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Want to hear from you. This is Matt and Air on Air. Keep the conversation going. Get some water. Get some snacks. Head on back. Stay tuned. Stay close. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. My name is Greg Box, sitting in for Jane Matt and Air, and you are listening on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you want to get in touch with us, call, text. It's the same number, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream. We are on Facebook, YouTube, and what we still call Twitter. Got a lot of shows still left before us. At 9:35, we have Sarah Gonski, who's the Director of State Policy for the Institute for response of government, talking about mail-in voting and voting machines and the importance of them in light of the attacks from President Trump. In the second hour, 10:06, of course, Darren Von Roon's here. It's the first Wednesday of the month, so he'll be talking about all things farming. But you can always be a part of this conversation by giving us a call or texting. We're talking about the fact that the union president from Milwaukee Police said that they are weighing in the decision of whether or not they're going to ask President Trump for help. With and when by what he means help, he means sending troops in on every corner, because they think that Milwaukee, as they said with other places, or actually J.D. Vance said last week in La Crosse, they got some crime, Calvin. They got some crime. And yeah, they do. Cities have crime. A lot of cities, a lot of towns, villages, unincorporated places have crimes. I do not believe that we are in need of military action.
Well, and that's the thing, is even there is a crime problem. I don't even want to say it's a problem, because it's not.
It's crime. Crime happens in cities.
Yeah, exactly. But even then, stopping it with force does not do anything to address why the crime is happening.
Yeah.
And I might be speaking out of turn or misinformed, but I believe there has been studies shown that as you increase policing of areas in the long term, it results in more crime.
Well, I mean, the thing, you want a partnership with the federal government on fighting crime. There's no doubt that there's crime in the city of Milwaukee. There's no doubt that there's crime in Waukesha. There's no doubt there's crime in Hayward. There's no doubt there's crime in Door County. Everywhere has crime of some sort. And you want to mitigate it. You want to handle it. And if it gets to a certain point, you want to know that you have a partnership with the federal government on this. And there are programs and ways of doing this. One of those ways is just even asking for federal funding to increase your police force. The problem I see is that the more you send troops around the country, the more you send them into the crime-ridden havens that are just criming all the crime that could ever be crimed, you eventually will deplete your forces. By the way, when we've talked about this on earlier shows, these individuals who are roaming the streets of various cities have jobs, whether they are reserve or whether they are actually in the military full time. They have jobs they need to be doing, and they're not being done. And after a while, you're going to run out of people. You're going to, and I don't want to run, I don't not want to look into the the crystal ball of the future of conspiracy theories. I don't like getting into those, but when you run out of people, you're going to start saying, hey, who wants to sign up? Who wants to be a part of this? Who wants to be deputized? Is that where we go? Because there are a lot of cities that voted not for Trump. Do we have enough troops to occupy all of them? And also, by the way, Kelvin, what happens if war? Do we start bringing troops home from other countries that are doing their job securing our national interests? Do we bring them home to say, "Hey, you're going to go to Tulsa, Oklahoma," because Tulsa, if you look at the election map, or somewhere like Lincoln, Nebraska, and I'm not kidding you, I'm not being facetious, and I'm not being a jokester. Look at election maps. Places like Lincoln, Nebraska, places like not Tulsa, Oklahoma, Omaha, Nebraska. Sorry, I don't know states sometimes. Those are places that did not vote for Trump. They voted for Joe Biden. They're blue dots in a red sea. Are you going to send troops there? I just need to know the plan. There's no plan for Chicago. He says he's sending troops into Chicago. Milwaukee could be next. King Rad on the live stream says, is there a lawyer who we can opine? I'm going to talk to Jim Santel about this tomorrow. I would really like to know, without a real plan, what are we going to do? I know there are people out there who are going to say, yeah, we need people in Milwaukee. We need troops in Milwaukee. We need to get it straight. Well, so far, crime has not been completely eliminated in those other cities. Yeah, they've gone days without having major crimes, but that doesn't mean crime has gone away completely. Jim in Brookfield's on the call line. Jim, what do you say to this, my friend? Good morning, and thank you for being here.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good morning, Greg. I just want to say you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Going solo, you're doing great. It's not surprising that the police union is behind bringing more troops. Remember, this is an outfit that worked out a deal under the table with Scott Walker to avoid the Act 10 cuts. You know, so basically the police union you know, and I have a great deal for the police and respect them, but the union mm-hmm. basically is an arm of the Republican Party, so that's no surprise.
Yeah.
And I just want to say regarding the troops in D.C., my daughter, she just graduated from University of Minnesota. She's been working out there for a couple of years. Yes, she's seen them out there, and she's a little overwhelmed by them. And I told them, I said, look, you know, remember, this is just really a publicity stunt, a show of force unnecessary by our president. And also remember that these troops, they're in the National Guard. They're not full-time military.
Yep.
These are people just
yeah.
like me and you who volunteer, you know, to help our country in the time of a crisis, which is this is not. You know, it's what, 1 week in a month and 2 weeks in the summer or something. Mm-hmm. They're a part-time force, but yeah. they're working people just like you and me
yes.
who go there and volunteer their time. They should be commended, but unfortunately their efforts and their time and their sacrifice, I think, is being wasted out there in D.C.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate your call. And that's right. And it also has detrimental effects on the economies of those cities. And I know for a fact D.C.'s economy has taken a hit in the home market, as well as just people not wanting to go there. So we're going to talk more about this tomorrow. We're going to talk more about this with Jim Santel, hopefully get some thoughts on the law side of what this means for cities, especially a place like Milwaukee, where Chicago's not that far away. But we're going to keep the conversation going. But for now, we're going to get some snacks, get some water. It's important to stay hydrated. When we come back, we're going to talk to Sarah Gonski from the Institute for Responsive Government about voting machines, mail-in voting, and why they are safe, wonderful, constitutionally protected, and why we need them. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned. Stay close. Good morning and welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. My name is Greg Box, sitting in for Jane Matt and Air, who's currently vacating deservedly, relaxing awesomely, and she misses and loves you, and she'll be back before you know it. But you got me today for the show, and we're very, very happy to have you. If you want to call or text, do it on the same number. It's 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. You can leave a comment on the live stream, which is also on Facebook, YouTube, or what we also still call Twitter here. Also, by the way, just as a side note, you want to leave a racist comment on the live stream, we're going to remove it and remove you. So just as a warning, be cool, man. Just be cool. Now, before we get any further, I want to introduce our guest today. She is the Director of State Policy for the Institute for Responsive Government. Sarah Gonski is here. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
I really, really appreciate you taking the time out here to join us to talk about this very, very important story that came out about a week and a half ago, and he basically, once again, it's Donald Trump is taking aim at voting machines and early voting, basically anything that's not the traditional walk in the room, vote, and put your piece of paper in the box or pull a lever he wants to get rid of. And before we get to that, I want you to just talk about what the Institute for Responsive Government does and what you do in your role.
Yeah, as the Director of State Policy, I work on policies with the Institute for Responsive Gov that help make government more responsive. We are a nonpartisan think tank and advocacy organization that is focused on building resilience in elections and helping the government achieve practical policies that actually make it a helpful source of customer service delivery to folks that live and pay for it.
Okay. And I mean, that seems fairly like a bipartisan thing, something that should not be on the right or the left. It should not be anything other than just standing up for what America is built on, the values. And yet we still have to put ourselves in the position to defend mail-in voting, voting early, the voting machines that are perfectly safe. I mean, you put out a press release about a week ago just talking about the importance of combating the words of Donald Trump as far as his attacks on things that are both safe and protected in the voting process. And I imagine that, you know, this kind of went away and now it's back. He's made it a thing again.
I think that's right. And I think, you know, a couple things to keep in mind about this is that what we are seeing has been a continuing theme for the past couple of years, that it's not actually about security. It's just about politics.
Yeah.
The good news is that these sort of orders that he's issuing have all of the legal force of a sticky note on a refrigerator. it's a great way to announce the president's feelings on what he would like states to do about voting policy, but he does not actually have the legal authority to strong arm states into doing what he wants on election policy.
And mail-in ballot, I mean, I looked at the press release, and there was a lot of great articles from your website. And I just want to start with one that says why mail ballots are secure. And there are, it's because I think what they want to do is press this narrative that someone's going in the middle of the night and changing all the it is next to impossible to do what they say is being done, a nationwide fraud of voting.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the idea that our elections are secure is not just some pie out of the sky thing that election officials are saying to make everybody sleep better at night. In fact, our elections are built upon layers and layers and layers of checks and balances where there are multi-factors of security built into every step of the voting process. And that is everything from ballot proofing and printing and security at warehouses, all the way through election day, through tabulation, and through post-tabulation audits and checks. Every jurisdiction in America will have bipartisan teams overseeing every step of this. Many of these processes are online that you can stream, you can watch ballot tabulation happening, political parties are invited. The process is incredibly open and incredibly layered with security protections in so many different phases that it would be functionally impossible for somebody to do the sort of large scale fraudulent meddling that has been the basis for a lot of theories and attacks on elections over the past couple of years.
And I just want to remind people that last year in the 2024 election, Ron Johnson, who is no fan of I guess, the liberal ways or whatever, and he can have all his opinions. He went to the Milwaukee County Center in there, looked at it because there were some questions, and he came out and said, this is a safe process. This is good. They're doing good work. He, Ron Johnson, complimented them. So I feel like if he's starting there, that's something to behold in the process of what's going on. And something you just said that's very important as well is when you have a sitting president, regardless of party, saying something like this, it's very hard to implement it because, as you just said, this is state by state. This is not a federally run election. Every state has their own process, has their own people, has their own ways of doing it. And for the president to say, I want this to happen, I mean, let's say a pie in the sky version, everyone says, okay, we're going to do this. How long does it take to implement it if it's state by state? That's the other big factor is that this is not a federally run election. This is and it's not even, it's state run, but it's also county run. It is so layered, as you say, that I don't even know how the federal government could become involved in that sense.
There is a lot of practical difficulties that this would face, for sure. So in order for this to be effectuated, you'd have to have each and every state legislature go in and tinker around with any number of state laws. Keep in mind that we have states that are both red and blue states that are overwhelmingly voting by mail. I am talking to you today from Maricopa County, Arizona, a place that knows a thing or two about elections.
I've heard about that place.
Just once or twice.
Yeah.
In Maricopa County in the 2020 election, we had about 90% of folks vote by mail, and that number is about 80% in a non-COVID year. That's in a state that is not particularly known for progressive voting laws, right? So elections are run by mail in many, many different ways across the country. And all of the folks that are voting by mail run a broad swath of geographics, a broad swath of ideological backgrounds. It's not like Democrats are using mail-in voting as sort of one hack to win elections. This is, in fact, a method of voting that's broadly used everywhere. And so in order to change this at a practical level, what would have to happen is you'd have to have all of these state legislatures go in and roll back an awful lot of entrenched voting laws, which would mean changing things like not just voting by mail statutes, but the way mail ballots are tabulated, the way that elections are actually run. And you'd have to go in, have all of the courts approve all of those changes, and then have voters actually make these adjustments. And so that's why there's a lot of reasons why the president is not in charge of state election law. The Constitution is pretty unequivocal in that, that Congress and state legislatures get to decide, not the president. And this is probably one of them. It's not actually a very helpful way to make public policy to have one official get up there and be able to set policy in 50 states for lots of different populations.
If you're just joining us on Matt and Air on Air, we are speaking with Sarah Gonski, who is the director of state policy for the Institute for Responsible Institute for Responsive Government. And we're talking about the latest rehashed attack from President Trump on voting machines, mail-in voting, anything that's not the walking in the day of, putting your name, putting the name in the box he does not like, does not want. It's back. We thought it was gone. It's back. Has one conversation with the Russian president. It's back. I got a question on the text line, though, from Jana in Waukesha. And I want to connect this with something greater worldwide with regard to voting, which is, could mail-in ballots be taken away from voters, be considered a violation of peoples with disability who rely on such systems? And I'm going to take that question. And also, the folks who are overseas, our troops, our workers, anybody who is a anyone who is a citizen of this country who can vote legally, living in a non-America country, this seems like a violation on many systems of their ability to vote. It would just basically mean, like, if you live in Europe, you can't vote. Sorry. If you can't get here, sorry, you don't get to vote.
I think that's right. And I think I'm a military kid myself, and I've spent time being an overseas voter in my adult life. And so I have particular resonance with this population. But yeah, I think the idea of taking away mail voting would really strip away a fundamental method of exercising a core constitutional right for our service members, our military personnel, and the elderly. As you mentioned there, there's a lot of folks that are confined because of mobility challenges to places that don't allow them to get in a car and drive to the nearest polling location. Also, a lot of rural voters out there can sometimes live an hour away from the nearest polling location. It's quite far and difficult to get there, particularly in November in places where the roads aren't very good or very passable in some rural areas. So there are a lot of populations that really rely on voting by mail. And I think the question of whether or not stripping them away would trigger a lot of constitutional questions over whether this is something that the state even can do or whether this is stripping away a constitutional right. I think that there would be a lot of litigation spawned because of this from exactly those types of populations that we just discussed.
Yeah. And I want to point out something that you just mentioned as well, and something we've made very clear on this show for a long time, is that a lot of these time, you know, a lot of these declarations from this administration make it in the they want to push the narrative of making America great again. They want to do all these. But really what they do also is hurt a lot of rural folks. The policies, and this, as you said, would hurt rural folks. And I just want that to be, I want to repeat what Sarah just said, because I just want people to remember that, that this is, let it not divide us. We need to protect all the people here. And one of those groups of people are people who live out in the farmlands who, as you said, live far away from polling places. And these types of policies can harm. And one of the things I wanted to ask Sarah, too, is, you know, if the as you mentioned, that this is essentially a sticky note on the fridge, which, by the way, I love that. I'm going to use that. I'm going to steal it. But I will also give you credit every time I say it, because now every time I think of an executive order, I just think of a sticky note that's just slowly falling off a refrigerator. And I'll make the analogy apt. This wasn't a thing a month ago. We had that this topic had kind of died away. You know, you saw news outlets having to pay money for lying about the security of our voting. But now it's back because he says so. And now we need to have this conversation. You have to put out a press release to remind people that mail-in voting is safe, secure, guaranteed, and we've been doing it for decades now.
That's right. I think I was hoping after 2020 that we could talk about other things for a little while, but no rest for the weary for the election lawyers out here. But I think that's right. And I think a couple things just to underscore some of the points before we, you know, as we think about what this would mean, is that, you know, President Trump has himself in the past encouraged his supporters to vote by mail. Republicans actually gained votes by mail last year. Mm-hmm. And last year, a full third of the national electorate voted by mail. And that includes a lot of states with these rural populations like Indiana and South Dakota and Utah seeing some of the biggest uptick. So this is a common routine voting method that has, it actually was led, the effort to you know, include more vote by mail statutes was led by Republican states back in the 90s and 2000s. And so this is a fundamentally secure method of voting that we can feel good about moving forward, politics notwithstanding.
All right. We're going to keep the conversation going with Sarah Gonski, who is the director of state policy for the Institute for Responsive Government. We're going to keep this conversation going, but we're going to move it to electronic voting machines, because that was also a part of the target in President Trump's remarks. So we're going to keep the topic flowing. You can call, text 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream. But don't go far. Stay close. Stay tuned. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. My name is Greg Box, sitting in for Jane Matt and Air, who is currently vacating deservedly. She just texted me right now, everyone, and she says she loves you and she misses you, and she'll be back before you know it. But you got me and you got Sweet Cal B on the dials. You can call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what we in this house still call Twitter. In the second hour, 10:06, we have Darren Von Ruden, who is the president of Wisconsin Farmers Union, giving us all the updates on the farming. Audio sorbet at 10:35, and then this shouldn't be a thing at 10:52. Don't go anywhere. Stick around. You're having fun. I know it. I can see it. I can see it. I can't see you, but I can feel it. We got Sarah Gonski, who is the director of state policy for the Institute for Responsive Government, still here talking about fresh attacks from President Trump on mail-in voting, voting equipment, and just the voting process. Essentially, the conceit is if you live in a blue state, it's wrong. If you mail-in vote by red states, you're fine. We'll figure it out later. Nuance. Who needs it? But Sarah, something you brought up that was very interesting before we went and grabbed ourselves a snack to return after the news. Hold on. Had to cough. But you mentioned the Republicans' endorsement of mail-in voting, and I forgot to even mention that, too. In December of 2023, the Wisconsin GOP got a new chairman, Brian Schimming, and he made it very clear that he wanted to push the narrative that mail-in voting was safe, accurate, and something you should take hold of. And as you said, they did. And now we're back again saying that mail-in voting is bad. And now we're saying that the voting election equipment is bad. The electronic voting machines were another target in President Trump's attacks. And we saw two major news, well, Fox and a Newsmax or whatever, but they had to pay hundreds of millions of dollars because they made inaccurate statements about electronic voting machines, which sows distrust and has a knock-on effect. And what do you say to that? Like, what do you say to people who have even the like, well, can we really trust it? What is your and your group's response?
Yes, we absolutely can trust it. I would say that election equipment is tested to the max. It is some of the most tested, recertified, retested, and examined equipment used in government, full stop. Mm-hmm. In general, machines go through federal certification, state and local certification before and after every election. Machines have paper backups as well. So there are literal receipts. Most of the time, if you are voting on a machine, then it is creating a paper ballot. At minimum, it creates a paper receipt that can literally be go and be checked against that cast vote record. And it is. The equipment is also sealed. It is kept in usually very locked down conditions with limited physical access, limited digital access. The chain of custody rules are insane. If you've ever seen election equipment be unpacked or set up, there are more seals than a SeaWorld show. Everybody is unwrapping things with bipartisan teams that are reading out serial numbers. There is all sorts of audits going on at every stage of the election process. And then lastly, I'm going to say this like multiple times for the cheap seats, but voting machines are not connected to the internet. They are not connected to the internet. They are fully air-gapped systems, which means that if you walk into a tabulation room, for example, in Maricopa County in Arizona, where I sit, when you walk into the room where the voting equipment is, you can see physically all of the lines of connection that are the internet lines. Those are actual physical wires that are kept outside the walls so that everybody can take a peek. So voting machines are not connected to the internet. basically, in short, they are some of the most inspected, looked over machines that we can use.
More seals in a SeaWorld show. Okay. All right. I see what you're dealing with there, Sarah. I like it. I like it. And also, let's not forget something, that these companies who create and run and contract these machines to various states for their elections, they have a vested interest in making sure their equipment is correct. Because even if take away the planned fraud conspiracy side of it, if one of those machines goes wrong and say one machine starts tabulating incorrectly, they're going to face massive problems, investigations, possibly fines, lawsuits. I mean, it is in their best interest to create the best machines possible. It doesn't make sense for them to engage in a multi-state fraud to upend our elections. It just never has made sense. And there's never been proof, by the way, to show that this has been the case. But yet here we are, as you said, post 2020, still talking about it because the guy in Washington, D.C. said they're bad. And now other people are saying, well, I guess they might be bad.
That's right. And I think that there is just an awful lot of room for conspiracy theories when election administration is just so complicated and it's so localized that it feels like an impossible subject matter to sort of get your arms around how things actually work. And what that's kind of done is leave a breeding ground for people to assume that they probably know how it would work.
Yeah.
And I think in general, one thing to just keep in mind is that these voting equipment is used in counties run by Republicans, run by Democrats, from your deep ruby red counties to your Brooklyn, New York, are using similar voting equipment from similar manufacturers, testing it, retesting it in their own local jurisdictions, thousands of them before the election, after the election. Certainly somebody would catch if there were anything wrong. And to your point, the equipment manufacturers have an enormous vested interest and a lot of careers riding on the fact that those machines are reliable.
Yeah. And I'm just going to pose this question to those who may believe that this is inaccurate what we're talking about. If that's the case, then the people who you voted for in your conservative areas or just yourself, they didn't win either. So there, it's not just one candidate. It's all of the candidates. It would all have to be redone. It's too many questions to support a theory like this. So Sarah Gonski, Director of State Policy for the Institute of Responsive Government, thank you so much for being our guest. We'll put all this stuff on our show notes today, and we'll get your groups on the show notes as well. We really appreciate your time on this. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back, it's going to be time for the Farm Update with Darren Von Ruden from the Wisconsin Farmers Union. So don't go far. Stay close. Stay tuned. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.